the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
It's time for our annual fiction books of the year. And as ever, we have brought back Adele Coffey and Kevin Parr to us because Adele, author and columnist, Kevin, author and assistant professor of literary practice. Which university again is that, Kevin?
At Trinity.
Trinity, okay.
I try not to say it in such a smug way, but the only way to say Trinity is in a smug way. There is no other way.
Fair enough. Okay. Right, let's get to all of your choices. And Adele, you are starting with somebody who has one of her books adapted into a major TV show at present. But you've gone for Andrea Mara's It Should Have Been You.
Yeah, look, if anybody's had a year, like surely she is the Irish author of this year. She's had such massive success with her adaptation, All Her Fault, which has just been nominated for an Emmy as well. So like it's been a runaway year for Andrea Mara. She's a brilliant thriller writer from Dublin. This one is her most recent one. It came out in May this year. It's called It Should Have Been You. And as always with Andrea Mara books, it starts with this just brilliant, very plausible, very ordinary kind of mess up. So basically this woman, Sarah, she sends this really gossipy, annoyed text to her sister's WhatsApp group. So she's got these sisters and it's basically giving out about her neighbours, talking about who's having affairs, talking about which neighbour's children she doesn't like. And she sends it. And of course, she sends it to the neighbourhood WhatsApp group, which has a few hundred people in it. And then it goes viral. And then the next day, somebody is murdered. And the whole premise is that it's a case of mistaken identity and it should have been Sarah who is murdered. And like, that's all, this all happens like in the first couple of pages. And you just wonder, like, where can she take it from here? How will she even think of more plots? But as always with her, I'd love to have a look inside her head because the twists, and anyone who's watched that All Her Fault will understand, there are so many twists you just don't see coming. It's just so satisfying. And it's, again, I'm thinking of Christmas. You want to just disappear into a book that completely captivates you. And this is one of those.
Okay. Kevin, your first choice is another Irish writer, a debut novel from Belfast writer Gráinne O'Hare, Thirst Trap.
Yeah, this is it's being, if you look at the cover, it's really being marketed to people who are already fans of writers like Nisha Dolan. So it's got an extremely Nisha Dolan-esque cover, which is, you know, that's fine. This is how books are brought to the attention of readers. But it's distinctively Gráinne O'Hare's own. She's a young writer. She lives in London. She's working on a PhD over there. But she's written this novel about three young women in contemporary Belfast. Their names are Maggie, Harley and Rosha. And they'll share a house together. And it's sort of like it's the setup for a Channel 4, you know, sort of youth targeted sitcom. And so yeah, everything about it might kind of go, yeah, I heard this all before. But in fact, it's a really, really original book. It's beautifully done at the level of getting us inside the emotional landscapes of these characters, following them through the kind of relationships that don't work. They're all about to turn 30 and they're really experiencing this relatively new phenomenon in kind of Western life of adolescence dragging itself through your 20s and adulthood receding, seeming slightly further away with every year you get closer to 30. And it's deeply sympathetic to them. There's extremely funny bits. There's extremely beautiful, moving scenes in this novel. All the characters are given this, just they're given their due. You know, there's no character in this book that hasn't been thought about, fleshed out, brought to life. It's really an extremely good debut novel.
Okay, Adele, you're going for a Dan Brown book. Dan Brown, The Da Vinci Code, wasn't that the book? Was it about a quarter of a century ago at this stage in the Tom Hanks movie? I didn't know he was still on the go. The Secret of Secrets.
I love the confusion in your voice that I've selected this for one of my books of the year. But look, you know,
Is it confusion that you're sensing?
Or maybe disdain, I don't know. Look, all I'm going to say is, if I read a book and I love it, I'm going to recommend it. And this book, you know, this is his first book in 8 years. Yes, it's Dan Brown of the Da Vinci Code fame. And the character in this book is Robert Langdon, who is the guy from the Da Vinci Code. Now, I got sent this, I opened it, I thought, do you know what? I'll see what all the fuss is about. Because believe it or not, this is actually the first Dan Brown book I've ever read. And I opened it and I came up for air about 3 hours later. And it's meticulously plotted, it's meticulously researched. So I'll tell you the story of it. It's so Robert Langdon is in Prague with Catherine Solomon, who's this brilliant scientist, and he started dating her. She's there to give a talk about her new book, which is groundbreaking research into human consciousness. And but shadowy forces do not want this information to come out. So so it turns into this sort of battle to kind of protect her book and all the information. And also the CIA and all sorts of other people are trying to suppress it. And it's just a read, really exciting, really pacey read. But what elevates it is all that research he's done into human consciousness, because everything that he includes in this book is it's all science based. It's all research that's already existing, and it's all real, essentially. So I actually,
it's not just something that he pulled
on
off the internet. No,
no, well, maybe, but you know, there's really mad, interesting things here. Like, for example, there's this one thing I came across was when this scientist is writing her book, she has to write it in this protected server within the Penguin Random House book group. And apparently this is real. In the book, Dan Brown says, for authors who are so successful that they actually, if their books were leaked, it would affect the bottom line of these big publishing houses, they actually write their books within a server. So I presume he is one of those people. But even details like that, it's worth it.
Adele,
for that alone.
Your day for that will come. You'll get that.
I hope so, Matt.
Kevin, you've gone for another Northern Ireland writer for your next choice, and a book called Everyone's Still Here. This is Liadán Ní Chuan.
Yeah, this is my literary book of the year. This is an extraordinary debut volume of short stories published by a writer about whom we know very little. We know that they are a Northern Irish writer. They identify as non-binary. And we know that Liadán Ní Chuan is a pseudonym, is a pen name. But it's beyond all that. It's sort of, you know, they have been compared to Elena Ferrante, you know, who's a writer who's shying away from public attention, you know, has no media presence particularly. But they are genuinely an original writer of short stories. This is an extraordinary book. It's six short stories, most of them set in Derry or its environs. They're very hard to describe because they don't proceed in a kind of linear fashion. But the first story in the collection is about a young medical student in Derry thinking about his father who's just died, and in a larger sense thinking about the legacy of the Troubles. And it uses the Troubles and the idea of dissecting a body, which he's doing as part of his medical training, to kind of metaphorize how we excavate the past, how we dig up ourselves and other people and bring things out of our bodies and out of the body of kind of collective memory. And it becomes in a much larger sense about what's happening in Gaza, what's happening in Ukraine, what has happened, you know, throughout history. And it's all of this is done in this beautiful, eloquent, but unassuming prose. That's just one example of six really extraordinary stories. This is a writer who's going to do absolutely phenomenal stuff.
Okay, that sounds very interesting. Your next choice, Adele, is Leila Lalami. Is that who it is?
Yeah, Leila Lalami. A hard one to trip off the tongue. But she's written a book called Dream Hotel. And this was long listed for the Women's Prize actually this year. For fans of Margaret Atwood, I think this one is perfect, because it is a kind of slightly dystopian set in the very near future. And it's very, very plausible. So basically, you've got this kind of risk assessment administration that monitors people's risk of committing crimes based on a collection of their data. So they'll use like 200 different sort of metrics for measuring each individual person's data. And this woman, the protagonist in this book, she is pulled aside at the airport as she's coming home to her husband and child, and she's told that her risk assessment has, you know, triggered an alarm, it's gone too high, and it turns out she's been having violent dreams about her husband. And, you know, as I've said before, Matt, who amongst us has not had those dreams? But however, because she signed up for this sort of sleep, it's like an implant to help her get more restful sleep within a shorter period of time, she sort of accepted the terms and conditions on having her dreams monitored. So it's this very, very interesting plot that sort of explores where we're going with all of our data collection and those you know, cookies that we just check, accept, 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 you know, what it could possibly mean. So it's very clever and it's very original, but it's really interesting on women as well, on how women are expected to behave. Okay. Because when she's sort of detained, every time she sort of gets angry, her detention gets longer. So it's really interesting on that point.
The name
as
of
well.
The book again is?
Dream Hotel by Leila Lalami.
Okay, your next choice, Kevin, is one that I have been considering for reading over Christmas. So you're recommending Ian McEwan's What We Can Know.
Yeah, this is Ian. I mean, Ian McEwan obviously has won the Booker for Amsterdam. He's the author of Enduring Love and Atonement. He's a real, you know, he's a pillar of the British literary establishment at this point. This is a science fiction novel. And it's technically his second science fiction novel. He wrote one called Machines Like Me a few years ago. But this one is set about 100 years from now in a post-war world when America has descended into a sort of collection of anarchic warring tribes, and Europe has been inundated by climate change and turned into a kind of archipelago of islands. And the UK in particular, where the novel is set, is now made up entirely of mountain peaks that have now become islands. And it's become a kind of peaceful liberal republic. In this setting, we have Tom Metcalf, who's an English literature academic. He teaches at the University of the South Downs, and he goes looking for a poem that disappeared in our time, but which has become legendary in its afterlife. And in doing that, he travels back, you know, in a scholarly way, he goes back to our time and finds this huge, rich archive of text messages, WhatsApps, emails, social media posts, videos. And it's a way of writing about our own time from the perspective of a kind of alienated observer who's looking back at this moment of enormous wealth and privilege and complexity and self-regard and complacency with no knowledge of what the future will hold. He sets up all kinds of interesting ironies there about, you know, how we should think about now, this moment now, when we have so much and yet everything around us seems to be fraying and we can't imagine any viable future.
I'm looking forward to that. Your next one, though, Adele, is about 600 pages long. It's called The Sisters. Who's it by?
Yeah, it's by a Swedish-Tunisian author called Jonas Hassan Khemiri, and that's my own personal attempt at pronunciation there. It's called The Sisters. He's kind of a literary star already in Sweden, but this is his first novel that he's written directly in English. And it's about these sisters, unsurprisingly, three sisters, the McCullough sisters, and they too are Swedish Tunisian, and they are sort of operating under this belief that their family is under a curse. Now, it's really hard to describe what the story is, because it's one of those books. It reminded me a lot of like The Corrections by Jonathan Franzen or The Beasting by Paul Murray. So like, if you like those books, love this one. It's about like all the characters are so distinct and you just love them immediately. You kind of, it's very smoothly written. There's no resistance. You open this book and again, you just get sucked in. And it's very sort of formally inventive too. It's each section is like seven sections and each one is a different sort of length of time. Like one is a year long, one is a minute long. So it kind of, it sort of sucks you along as well. It almost reads like a pacey thriller, but it's a beautiful sort of literary long book. And again, I think this is the time of year that we have. It's probably the only opportunity we have in our busy lives to read books of this length is over Christmas. So yeah, really, really love this one. And if you like Franzen, or if you like The Beasting by Paul Murray, I think you'll love this.
Okay. John Patrick McHugh, Fun and Games. Tell us about this one, Kevin.
This is almost a nostalgic readerly experience for men of a certain age who might have enjoyed the early novels of Martin Amis, which are about the slightly kind of grosser.
It is kind of like the Rachel papers, yeah, actually, isn't it?
Yeah.
I read this too. I really enjoyed this.
It's a very fun book. It's kind of got the grosser or more excruciating aspects of male adolescence. So, or a bit like the TV show The Inbetweeners. It's kind of under that. And yet, beautifully written, very literary novel.
With GAA, don't forget.
It's about... It's set on an island off the coast of Mayo, and it's about John Masterson, who's he's just done his Leaving Cert, and it's about that pivotal summer between the Leaving Cert and the beginning of college and the rest of life. He's got a girlfriend called Amber. He can't make head nor tail of her. The novel gets great kind of comedy out of this. But also it views being a young man who finds meaning in sport, in GAA, incredibly sympathetically. And it does something really remarkable that I rarely see in a novel, which is that it describes a game, a Gaelic match, in detail and keeps you reading, because, you know, that should be pretty boring, should be alienating, but because you understand the emotional stakes of what's going on, it really, really works. He's a really talented writer. He's very young, John Patrick McHugh. He already published a book of short stories called Pure Gold a few years ago. This is the first novel. Again, I think there's real, real talent here. He's going to go on to do more great stuff.
Very interesting. Okay, your next choice, Adele, is Lisa Jewell, Don't Let Him In.
Yeah, I loved Lisa Jewell. She's this thriller writer. This is her 23rd novel. She's English. She just does those very, very powerful, impactful, twisty psychological thrillers, and I love them. But this one went to the next level. It's called Don't Let Him In, and it's kind of, if you saw those programs on Netflix like Dirty John, or if you might have read The Adversary, that French book by Emmanuel Carrère, it's very much like that. It's this guy who just works his way into sort of vulnerable women's lives. So it begins with this guy called Nick, who turns up on Nina's doorstep after her husband has died, and he says, oh yeah, your husband and I went to college together, or it was something like that, and I just want to express my condolences, or we ran a business together, I think was the excuse he used. And he sort of slowly inveigles his way into her life and, you know, becomes her partner. Her daughter is very suspicious. Nick seems very perfect. And then there's this whole other set of characters where, you know, things are going wrong. And it's all about these two storylines coming together. And again, just twist after twist and just a relentless pace. And you cannot put it down. I read this one on holidays. And again, you're in the hands of a master. She knows exactly what she's doing. So if you want a really rollicking kind of pacey one over Christmas, this is great.
I'm trying to get as many in as possible. So let's get Kevin to another guest on The Last Word during the year, Wendy Erskine and her book, The Benefactors. You do like a book from the North this year, don't you?
So it seems, yeah. There's a lot of good writing coming out of the North at the moment. What can I say? We should step up our game a bit down here. Wendy Erskine, of course, well known as a short story writer. She published two collections, Sweet Home and Dance Move, both very, very well received, very well reviewed, and very, very strong. This is the first novel. It's kind of kaleidoscopic. It has central figures, but really the way it works is that it introduces you to a whole suite of voices of people involved and around the central event, which is what may or may not be a rape or sexual assault of a young girl at a party. So it follows, you get to hear from the policemen investigating this and policewomen, you get to hear from the parents, you get to hear from every parent involved. Some of them are very well off, some of them are not. It becomes this kind of extraordinary collection of voices that give you a portrait of a society, pretty much Belfast as it is now, going from the bottom of the social scale to the top. And what is most impressive about it is that the way in which she inhabits so many different voices so authentically, brings them to life on the page. It's genuinely dazzling to keep turning the page and see a writer assume and yet another new and authentic voice. Really an extraordinary achievement.
Your next choice.
I agree with you on that one, though. I love that one too, I have to say.
Adele, your next choice is Claire Louise Bennett with Big Kiss, Bye Bye.
Yeah, I love Claire Louise Bennett. She's published by Fitzcarraldo, who generally just publish Nobel winners. That'll give you a sort of indication of the calibre of her writing. This is only her third novel. She wrote Pond in 2015 and then Checkout 19, which was out a couple of years ago. This one is, it had almost a physical impact on me. It's a very literary book. It's looking at this woman who is sort of separating from this older man that she's had a romantic relationship, but she does not, no longer wants to have that kind of romantic relationship, but she still loves him. But that's just a kind of hook to hang her sort of exploration of memory and time and, you know, how we come and go from each other's lives, how we can disappear from a person's life or their memory and then suddenly be back in their life. Now, she wrote a lot of this when she was a fellow in, is it Reading that the Beckett archives are? I think it's Reading University. And she had access to that archive. So there's a huge Beckett influence here. So if you're a Beckett fan, I think you'll enjoy this. But also what I appreciate about her so much is that she writes in this very high literary style whilst also having this very big emotional depth, which you often don't get those things together so much. But I love her. I think she's excellent.
Kevin, the next of your choices are going to take is the one that won the Booker, David Saloy, and Flesh. Why have you put that on your list? Worthy Booker winner?
Absolutely a worthy Booker winner. This is a really extraordinary achievement, this book. David Saloy, he's a British-Hungarian novelist. He has been publishing for quite a while, since I think 2008 or 2009 he published his first novel. This is his sixth book. And throughout those six books, he's been looking for new ways to write about what it means to be a man. And that's quite an interesting thing to do at this moment in the culture when, as everyone agrees, men are in crisis or crises of various kinds. So in a way, you can read him as a novelist who's trying to kind of rescue masculinity as a subject in an age of, you know, on the one hand, you have this deeply toxic manosphere stuff on the internet. And on the other hand, you have a feminism that is, you know, making huge inroads in large aspects of life and forcing men to confront all sorts of things that they might not necessarily want to confront. So Flesh is a kind of life story. It's about István, who is Hungarian, and he begins with István when he's 15. He's living in an apartment block in kind of provincial Hungary with his mother, and he is seduced slash, you know, assaulted. It's hugely grey. By a woman who lives, an older woman who lives in the apartment across the hall. An incident, it's not spoiling much to say, this is all in the first chapter, that she breaks up the relationship, István gets angry, he ends up pushing her husband down the stairs and the husband dies. And this kind of sets him off on a journey through, he goes to a Young Offenders Institute, he ends up fighting in the First Gulf War. He eventually ends up in London working as a bodyguard and then as a security kind of helper for a very, very wealthy couple. He travels through all the different, again, stages of the social order. And the social order appears as a phrase in the very first paragraph of the book. And it kind of tells you what kind of novel this is going to be. And I won't give away much more than that, but it's written in extremely short paragraphs, extremely pared back sentences as a way of expressing István's own kind of pared back, diminished, you know, inner life. He's a kind of man who can't even fully wake up to the idea that he's active in his own life. And yet there he is. He finds himself in all these situations kind of reacting. Yeah, it's an extraordinary book. I think a very, very well-deserved Booker winner.
Okay, your next choice, Adele. Gareth Carr was with us early in the year when The Boy from the Sea was published. Why have you picked this?
Oh, brilliant. Because he is a Northern writer, although I think he's Donegal. I'm joking, obviously, but he's written this gorgeous polyphonic novel. It's his debut novel, but he has written nonfiction before, and he's a creative writing teacher at Queen's University in Belfast. So this book basically begins in 1973 when this fisherman in a very small fishing community finds an abandoned baby on the beach, and he adopts the baby and brings the baby into their lives. And the book is all about, you know, what happens next and, you know, about the baby's effect, not only on the family directly, but also on the whole community. And there's so much humour in it and so much very specific rural, small community Irish humour that I really did enjoy it so much. You'll get such a laugh out of it. But also, again, there are some very serious aspects and issues that he is addressing. You know, obviously babies of unknown provenance have had a very large shadow in our history. So it's a really interesting book. It's very originally written, I thought, and I love the polyphonic aspect.
Now, somebody else, Kevin, who we had in the studio recently, was John Banville talking about Venetian Vespers. John is slowing down a little bit. He says he's not writing quite as much, but his output is still quite prolific, isn't it?
Well, for a man who turned 80 yesterday, and he is absolutely extraordinary. I mean, to be writing at the level that he's writing at, to have done so over such a long career. I mean, he is one of the major Irish writers. I think there's no two ways about it. We perhaps tend to take him for granted because he has a new book out every year and you can sort of see him walking around town. You know, there he is. But no, he's up there with I think the great Irish writers. This Venetian Vespers is a kind of thriller. It's set in Venice, of course, around about the year 1900. And it's narrated by this very odd man named Evelyn Dolman, who is a kind of literary critic, a hack. He produces kind of guidebooks for the popular market. He has married Laura Rensselaer, who's the daughter of one of these hugely wealthy Gilded Age American kind of plutocrats. And they've gone to Venice for their honeymoon. So far, that all seems above board. But in fact, almost nothing about Dolman or his situation is to be trusted. And he meets two very strange, very Banvillian ne'er-do-wells, a brother and sister in a bar, in Florian's bar in Venice, and gets drawn into, various shenanigans. I don't want to spoil too much, but it's an incredibly beautifully written book. It's it's a kind of pastiche of you know, prose written in the late 1890s, around 1900, but it's got all the, it's got what you expect from Banville, which is extraordinary image after extraordinary image, extraordinary turn of phrase after extraordinary turn of phrase. It's wicked humor, Kevin, and very funny. I chuckled
all the way through this. He's so wickedly funny, Banville. I love him.
We're going to take one more from each of you in the time I've got left. And I'm going to pick, you have about four more left, Adele, but I do want you to talk about Elaine Feeney, yes, who also has been a guest here on the programme on a number of occasions, and her novel that she released this year, Let Me Go Mad in My Own Way.
Yeah, and this is her third novel, and she came to sort of acknowledgement as a poet first. And so her previous novel was nominated, longlisted for the Booker, that was How to Build a Boat. This one, Let Me Go Mad in My Own Way, is her third novel. It is overtly a story of Claire, who has come home from London and broken up her relationship with Tom. Then Tom moves back to the west of Ireland and she's sort of reassessing her relationship, or their relationship. But there is also, there's sort of three storylines. There's like the present day, there's sort of the War of Independence, and then there's a kind of one from Claire's childhood. And it's just... It's an excellent novel in terms of the history of Ireland, in terms of the sort of the damage that's done generationally with that kind of war and historical violence, but then other sort of lasting, the legacy of violence from a domestic kind of angle as well. So a very multi-layered novel. And as always with Elaine Feeney, I think it's she gets right into the emotions as well as having the beautiful language. So, yeah, brilliant about historical drama, intergenerational drama, and also just like really sort of real women characters. I really love that about her books.
And just to finish, Kevin, you have the book, I think, was the novel of the year at the Irish Book Awards, Roisin O'Donnell's Nesting.
Yeah, this was a huge hit this year, and deservedly so. It's Roisin O'Donnell's first novel. I'd read an interview with her in the Irish Times recently where she said when she was working on this novel, she felt no one's going to want to read this. It's a novel about coercive control. No one's going to want to read this. But of course she was wrong, because I think it has resonated quite widely with a lot of people's experience. It's about Kira, who's married to Ryan, and Ryan is kind of one of these monsters hiding beneath the shell of propriety. You know, he coaches the GAA, and he's a pillar of the community. He looks extremely respectable, but in fact, inside the marriage is a sort of insidious nightmare of him manipulating her, using all tantrums, using, you know, all emotional breakdowns, all sorts of things, and becoming increasingly sinister and abusive. So she does the incredibly brave thing, and she leaves. And the novel follows almost procedurally what you might do in that situation, what women have to do in that situation. They sleeping in the car with the kids, trying desperately to find emergency accommodation. What happens to you once you're in emergency accommodation? What happens when he's put an app on your phone to track your movements? What happens when he has a legal claim on the kids? And it's the level of authenticity that's, has gone into the writing of this book makes it something that, you know, it's an unusual experience. It's an extraordinarily intense reading experience, but it is also just beautifully observed. And it's beautifully done. You know, early on in the novel, the family go to a cafe, and it's called Storm in a Teacup. And of course, that's what they are. And, you know, they're this family, you know, where everything looks fine, but is in fact absolutely horrendous within. And that's the kind of novel it is. It's very, very, you know, attentive to small details like that that make the reality feel even more real.
Kevin and Adele, thank you very much for giving us all of your choices. Kevin's novels include Bad Day in Black Rock and White City. Adele has written In Her Place and Breaking Point, which are also, although a few years old, still highly recommended.
A new one coming in February, Matt, called In Glass Houses.
We look forward to talking to you about that, Adele, the time.
Thank you.
So Adele Coffey and Kevin Parr, as ever, thank you again for coming back and giving us your selection of some of the best fiction books of the year, things which I'm sure many people will be buying and reading for the Christmas period.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.